on you for doing a good job of trying to respond to my arguments and then also making arguments of her own. That's a much different than some of the debaters I debate who will not even try to respond to the arguments. She chides me for bringing up the same thing over and over. Well, the reason I do that is because the Bible is very clear on this matter, and until you can respond to a way that contradicts what 1 Corinthians 14, 34, and 35 says, why wouldn't I go over and over? Now, Tanya, if we were on the other end of the stick and you were affirming women should not preach and I was saying they could, don't you think you would use 1 Corinthians 14, 34, and 35 over and over? Man, when you got a verse that clear on the matter, sure you read it over and over and over. I made up my mind before the debate started that if I have time, I would read that verse at least once in every speech. As I said, I believe I can read this passage and sit down, and it proves my proposition. It's very easy to understand. It is not ambiguous at all. It is like that God, before the beginning of time, I should say, when he wrote this passage, he had Tanya's position in mind. He said, let your women keep silence in the churches, for it is not permitted unto them to speak. Now, Tanya's contending that don't let your women keep silence in the churches, for it is permitted unto them to speak. Just like God told Adam that if you eat of this fruit, you shall surely die, and the devil told Adam, you shall not die if you eat, added the little word not in there. Well, Tanya's taking the not out. It says it is not permitted unto them to speak. In the Bible, she says it is permitted unto them to speak. It's very clear. No matter how many minutes you speak, you can't take the word not out of that verse, can you? But they're commanded to be under obedience, as also saith the law. And if they'll learn anything, let them ask their husbands at home, for it's a shame for women to speak in the church. That's very clear. It's a shame for women to speak in the church. I could say that over and over and over, and I just keep proving my proposition beyond a shadow of a doubt over and over and over. Tanya went in her second speech, but I didn't have time to respond to it because Alex cut me off at my time. Acts chapter 2, she mentioned about in Acts 2 beginning 1 and following that there were some women there that were speaking. I don't see how you can prove that. She did show in chapter 1 that there were some women there. But in Acts 2, in verse 14, it tells us who was speaking. But Peter standing up with the 11. That's Peter and the 11. That makes 12. That's the apostles. Now, if I remember correctly, my children, they can name off the 12 apostles right like that. I can't. But I believe they were all men the last time I checked. Peter and the 11 were all men. Where did you get women out of that, Tanya? Now, there was somebody that asked Alex a question. How come if it's okay for women to be preachers, why there weren't any of the apostles were women? And the answer is, passage like 1 Corinthians 11, verse 3, man is the head of woman. 1 Timothy 2, women are not to teach nor usurp authority over the man. Men are to take the leadership roles, not women. The apostles had a leadership role in the church. Therefore, they could not have been women, or they would have violated God's will on the matter of men taking the leadership role. It's a good question. Then in Acts 2:46, Tanya pointed out that they, talking about the members of the congregation there, continued daily with one accord in the temple. Well, that's right, Tanya, they did continue with one accord in the temple. Now, where does it say in that verse that the women spoke when they met in the temple? It doesn't, does it? And that's what you would need for your proposition to have this verse to help your proposition. Now, the temple was a building, but let me make it clear again, the church is not the building, it's the people. They did meet in the temple building, but it doesn't say the women spake when they met for assembly worship. Put up number 16, Mr. Timothy. She said, well, God is not against women, and as we pointed out over and over and over, no, God is not against women. That's not the point. As I illustrated, women are the ones that have the babies, and we don't get to, us men. Does that mean God is against us? No. It just means we have different roles. You know, even God the Father is head over God the Son, 1 Corinthians 11, verse 3, teaches that, and also 1 Corinthians 15. But that doesn't mean that Jesus is inferior to the Father, or the Father is superior to the Son. Not that at all. It's just they have different roles. And the same way with men and women. Man is the head of woman, 1 Corinthians 11, verse 3. And then she said that it seemed that Pat has changed position, now saying that women can teach, but not in the church. Do you remember my proposition from the very beginning, Tanya? I said that it's a sin for women to preach in the church assembly. Now, we should have been able to gather from that I don't think it's a sin for them to preach. By that, I mean teach the gospel. That it would be wrong for them to teach the gospel anywhere. That's a sign of the proposition. It said it's a sin for him to teach the gospel in the church. I said that from the very beginning, even by having that in the proposition. Put up number three. You remember when I said in my very first speech this morning and again today, earlier this afternoon, what the issue is? What do I mean by in the church? Well, the way it's defined is an assembled church. The whole church be come together into one place, 1 Corinthians 14:23. Like the 11 a.m. preaching service. I'm not talking about the Sunday school classes when a woman leads another lady's Bible class. Don't believe it's wrong for her to teach the gospel in that situation at all. And then when she pointed out, she said that the word speak in 1 Corinthians 14:34 and 35 was not a word that had to do with preaching the gospel, but meant like whisper or murmur. Two times I've given a number of passages where that same Greek word was either translated speak when somebody was preaching the gospel, or even in one place, Acts 11:19, it was translated preaching. Now she got up and said, well, that, you know, sometimes you have different Greek words that could translate to the same English word. Tanya, I didn't give the places from the English where it was the same. I gave the places where it was the same in the Greek. Now some of those places were translated speak, the same as 1 Corinthians 14, but one I gave was translated preach. It was the same Greek word. 2980, I believe, was the strongest number. Thayer defines this word in 1 Corinthians 14, speak, to use words in order to declare one's mind and disclose one's thoughts, to speak. So it just means to speak. I'm satisfied with that definition. Have you ever heard a woman preach, Tanya, without speaking? Without using words in order to declare her mind and disclose her thoughts, to speak? No, every time a woman preaches, she does that. Therefore, that's condemned by this passage. Now, Tanya, you gave up two or three words on your chart, the one I was looking at a while ago. One of them was the word that's normally, I hope Dustin's correct on this, but it looked like it to me, normally translated evangelist in the noun form, or evangelize or preach, when you're talking about what you're doing, okay? A lot of times translated preach. Then the third one you had on the transparency, I believe, was didasko. Did I pronounce that right, Dustin? It's close enough. Transliterated would be D-I-D-A-S-K-O, right, Dustin? Okay, that's transliterated. Dustin pointed out to me, that word, you're correct, it's not in 1 Corinthians 14, 34 and 35, but he pointed out to me something I didn't realize. That is the word translated teach in 1 Timothy 2. Now, her argument, Tanya's argument was that if one of these three words were used in 1 Corinthians 14, 34 and 35, you'd have a point, Pat. You'd prove your proposition. Because these words mean to preach. And then you would have the Paul, the Bible, forbidding a woman to preach. But she said it's not one of those three words. Well, it is one of those three words in 1 Timothy 2:11 and 12. Thank you, Dustin. It says, let the woman learn in silence with all subjection, but I allow not a woman to teach. That's didasko. That word that she was saying, that if it were in 1 Corinthians 14, 34, and 35, I'd prove my proposition. I allow not a woman to teach, nor usurp authority over the man, but to be in silence. So there's your word, Tanya. The one that you said would prove my proposition, it was if it were in 1 Corinthians 14. Now, it's here in 1 Timothy 2, and it's telling a woman not to do that over a man. And you do certainly do that over a man when you preach on Sunday mornings in the church assembly, don't you, Tanya? She mentioned Deborah and Huldah again. Now, I've already responded to that. She did not respond to my response. And so the reason we have more than one speech, I think there's a total of 12 speeches in this debate, six each, and they're alternating. So you make an argument, I respond. Then instead of making the same argument again, if I responded to it, what you do then is respond to my response. That's the way it would normally go. Now, since she didn't respond to my response, but she just repeated the same argument, that's okay to repeat the same argument if I never responded to it, to try to get me to respond to it the first time. But since I responded to it the first time, you respond to my response. My response was a number of things, but one I'll reiterate is that please show us in the Old Testament where Deborah or Huldah spoke to the Old Testament assembly. And notice I said the Old Testament assembly. That's not the same as the New Testament church assembly. So it really wouldn't prove what your proposition today, but at least it would come close. At least it would be parallel. At least the Old Testament assembly was parallel to the New Testament assembly. Please show us where Deborah or Huldah ever spoke to the Old Testament assembly. And then she said, Pat's got it to where women can teach the gospel, but they can't use that gift to edify the body. Well, they really can, because they can teach the women and children. They're in the body, aren't they? No problem with that. I'm not the one that says they can't teach over the man, that they can't lead a class that has men in it. 1 Timothy 2:11 and 12 said they're not to teach nor usurp authority over the man, so I'm not the one that said it that. Now, if Pat has it way, that's because God has it that way. Here's the way God has it. A woman can teach the gospel, but they're not to teach it in the church assembly, and they're not to teach it in a way that they would be teaching over a man. like leading a Bible class with men in it. As long as they're just teaching the gospel to a woman's Bible class or children, or even in a private conversation with a man who just happened to be talking about the Bible. My wife and I do that all the time, and I learn from her, but she's not teaching over me. She's not set up as the leader of a class over me. Apollos, Aquila and Priscilla did that with Apollos in Acts chapter 18. And by the way, don't mix up Acts 18, Tanya, with Romans chapter 16, verses 4 and 5. Yes, the church was in their house, but Aquila and Priscilla were not teaching Apollos in the church. It says they took him aside privately and taught it to him in Acts chapter 18. And then she said, well, 1 Corinthians 14, 34 and 35 was just dealing with the women disorderly, in a disorderly way, asking questions. You know, it does deal with a woman asking questions, but not necessarily in a disorderly way. It doesn't say that. As a matter of fact, you can prove that that's not all it's forbidding, is the asking of questions. Because it says in verse 34, let your women keep silence in the churches, for it is not permitted unto them to speak. And then it says in verse 35, notice the first word in that verse. And if they will learn anything, let them ask their husbands at home. And so, yes, it does forbid a woman from asking a question publicly to the assembly. But there's an and between 34 and 35, meaning don't do this and don't do that. Do you see that? It's not just the asking of questions that's forbidden. It's any speaking to the public assembly. And then she said, Pat's view that a woman can teach the gospel in some situations, but when she gets in the church assembly, she has to be quiet. She says that doesn't make sense. Tanya, let me point out to you a passage like Isaiah 55, verses 8 and 9. Isaiah 55, 8 and 9. I'm confident you're familiar with this passage. God said, for my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, saith the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. Now the point is, what God reveals doesn't have to make sense to us to be true. Now I'm not saying we don't use reasoning or sense. What we do is we use proper reasoning ability to figure out what the text says. But whatever the text says, even if it doesn't make sense to us, we have to accept it. You follow what I'm saying? Abraham had to use his reasoning to figure out that God was telling him to go sacrifice his son. It didn't make sense to him that God would tell him to sacrifice Isaac because he had already told him that he was going to have many descendants through his son Isaac. And it didn't make sense to him. Now he used his reasoning to understand that God said sacrifice Isaac. But after that he said, I know that God said that. It doesn't make sense to me, but I'm going to go ahead and do it even though it doesn't make sense to me. That's really what faith and trust in God is, Tanya, is being willing to accept and trust and obey God even if it doesn't make sense to you. If the only things in the Bible that you accept and obey are the things you agree with anyway, then you're not really serving the Lord. It just happens to be a coincidence that you're going to do the things in the Bible that you want to do or already agree with. The real test comes is when you don't agree with it. You don't agree with it. Like, for example, I believe that the Bible teaches in 1 Corinthians 11, 14 and 15 that a woman should have long hair. And my wife believes that. She doesn't like long hair. It's a lot more trouble than short hair. If it were up to her, she'd cut it off. It'd be easier to wash, easier to dry, and everything like that. But she doesn't reason why I don't like it, therefore I'm going to cut it off. Because it says, God says to have it, so she has it. That's what we do when it comes to the Bible. We accept it. Doesn't matter whether we like it or not. Now, I think that over time we can learn to like what God teaches us is good. But sometimes it takes time. But in the meantime, until we learn to like it or learn to agree with it, we got to go ahead and go along with it. Because it's sin if you don't accept it, even if you don't like it or don't agree with it. Tanya, do you ever quote Proverbs 14, verse 12 in your assemblies? There's a way which seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. My view may not make sense to you. It makes a whole lot of sense to me, but okay, I'll admit then it doesn't make sense to you. There's a way that seems right unto Tanya, but the end thereof are the ways of death, Proverbs 14, verse 12. The way that seems right to her is that women ought to be allowed to preach in the church assembly and teach over the man. But that's the end toward death, because when you do that, you transgress God's law, 1 Corinthians 14, 34 and 35, that tells her not to teach in the church assembly, and 1 Timothy 2 that tells her not to teach over the man. You transgress God's law. Well, 1 John 3, 4 says sin is the transgression of the law. Romans 6, 23 says the wages of sin is death. And so you see how it ends up in death if you follow the way that seems right to you, even though it's different from what the Bible says? And so we ought to learn a lesson from these two passages, Isaiah 55, 8 and 9 and Proverbs 14, verse 12. Let's not lean into our own understanding. Let's accept what God says about it. And I believe that God is very plain in this. He's not ambiguous whatsoever. You know, of course God teaches that women should teach the gospel, but they're not to teach in the church assembly, not to teach in a way where they usurp authority over the man. And then she put up number 15. She brought up Ephesians 4:11. Ephesians 4:11 does mention prophets. Now, here's basically a chart, number 25. Did I say 11? Okay, I'm sorry. This chart could apply to just about anything she wrote. Were you helping me out there a little bit, Tim? Or did I write that at another time? I guess I wrote it another time. Like, every passage that Tanya's going to try to use to prove that women could preach in the church assembly, one of three things is true. Either it doesn't mention the woman teaching, or two, it doesn't mention the church assembly, or three, it mentions neither. For example, Huldah is a good example. It doesn't mention that it was a church assembly, right? Or Deborah. You see, what you have to have is both. You need a passage that's talking about the church assembly and shows the woman teaching. Every passage that she brings up will fall into one of these three categories. Either it doesn't mention a woman teaching, doesn't mention the church assembly, or it mentions neither. Now, Ephesians 4:11 talks about prophets that God gave them. Now, it doesn't mention females in particular, but I would think that it would include females there. We would learn that by other passages that say that your women will prophesy, Acts 2:11. Philip's four virgin daughters prophesied. And so God gave some women prophets. So let's assume that there's women in there. So what we have here is we have a woman that taught. We've already admitted to that. Does this mention the church assembly? No. Now, they do help the church. Remember, the church is not the church building. It's the people. So when my wife, if she has an opportunity to teach a ladies' Bible class, at the church building, and those ladies are members of that church, nothing wrong with that, and she's edifying the body. You see that? But not in the church assembly, she's not. How much time, Alan? 3 minutes? Put up number 13. And so we want to come to a conclusion by pointing out that Tanya is trying to prove it is not a shame for women to speak in the church. I'm trying to prove it is a shame for women to preach in the church, to speak in the church. Now, what does 1 Corinthians 14:35b say? It is a shame for women to speak in the church. Tanya's trying to prove, don't let your women keep silence in the churches, for it is permitted to them to speak. I'm trying to prove, let your women keep silence in the churches, for it is not permitted unto them to speak. Now, what does 1 Corinthians 14:34 say? Put up the next one. Now, as far as pastors are concerned, not really necessarily on this topic, but it's related. The Bible teaches that a pastor or an elder or a bishop, as we pointed out this morning, is in a leadership role in the congregation. As Acts 20:28 and 1 Peter 5, 1 and 2 teach, they're overseers. But 1 Corinthians 11, verse 3 says that the man is head over the woman. Ephesians 5 says the husband is over the wife in particular. 1 Timothy 2 says the woman is not to usurp authority over the man. 1 Timothy 3, verse 2 teaches that the bishop must be the husband of one wife. Why would it have to be a husband? And by the way, Tanya's not a husband, obviously. Why would it have to be a husband? Because a bishop is a leadership role, and these other passages teach that the woman is not to have a leadership role. And so the woman's role is not leader of the congregation, not pastor. So she should not speak in the church assembly. She should not teach over the man, 1 Timothy 2. And she should not take a leadership role in the church, meaning like an elder, an overseer of a congregation. So I will close, though I believe I have one more speech. I will close this speech by just reading these passages again. Now, these passages clearly teach what I believe on this dispute, in this debate. 1 Timothy 2, 11 and 12 says, let the woman learn in silence with all subjection. But I suffer not, or allow not, a woman to teach, on that's the didasco, not sure I'm pronouncing it correctly, not to teach nor usurp authority over the man, but to be in silence. So the woman is not to teach over the man. Now, as I mentioned this morning, this context of this chapter is everywhere. Verse 8, let the men pray everywhere. Verses 9 and 10, modest clothing. That's anywhere. Ball game, church, Sunday school class, anywhere. The woman is not to teach nor usurp authority over the man. 1 Corinthians 14, turn there, is different. It's only talking about when the whole church is all together in one place, verse 23. And it says the woman is not to speak. It says, let your women keep silence in the churches, for it is not permitted unto them to speak. And remember, we pointed out, I think Alex had 5 or 6 cases where this Greek word, Tanya, translated speak here, is translated preach in the New Testament written down. And I only brought up 2 of them, though. Mark 2:2 and Acts 11:19. Let your women keep silence in the churches, for it is not permitted unto them to speak. But they are commanded to be under obedience, as also saith the law. And if they will learn anything, let them ask their husbands at home, for it is a shame for women to speak in the church. That should settle the matter. It is clear. Please let it settle the matter. Thank you very much.